I've eaten testicles of all kinds in my travels, but this is a first. Black balls.
Well, they're very good for the manhood, Andrew.
They're extremely creamy.
Yeah.
It's like having milk jello inside of a paper-thin balloon membrane, and the moment you put any toothpaste at all, the whole thing just explodes in your mouth.
Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Damn, those Andrew Zimmern balls in the mouth jokes just never get old, do they? He loves having penis and balls in his mouth, and he loves to talk about it and tell you how rich and creamy it is. I'll tell you, if he continues to do that, I'm going to continue to exploit it. Hey, that intro music you heard was courtesy of Chris Zippel. The song is Space Dock. You can buy it on iTunes. Check out our website, zeroface.wordpress.com. I got a direct link to the iTunes store. You can purchase that song right off of our site if you're interested. 99 cents. Chris Zippel, Space Dock. So, it's our first show in the new year. And I have to say, I am happy that 2007 is over. Man, that year sucked. One of the most up and down years I've ever experienced in my life. I had funerals. And I had weddings. Professionally and personally, I had ups and downs I had not seen. People very close to me had horrible Decembers. But most of that is behind us now, and we can get on with the new year. But that was a rough ride. So we'll have a new attitude and some new things to look forward to. I won't get into details, but man, New Year's Eve. I spent New Year's Eve with my wife in the emergency room. Everything's okay now, but... yeah, that kind of sucked. You know, I told her, 17 New Years we've spent together. Yeah, we're going to remember this one. It was pretty screwed up. We did our midnight kiss in the waiting room of the ER. How romantic. It was funny. We laughed the whole time. Didn't get home till like 1:45. We were there for 5 hours. We had a Russian crack whore in the... In the I don't know if you call it a room, there's drapes everywhere, but in the bed next to us. And she was yelling and screaming at the top of her lungs, and they were calling the cops on her, and she was just ridiculous. Moose and squirrel. Anyway, we have some new listeners, and I wanted to welcome our new listeners. You know who you are. I won't point you out to anyone and embarrass you. Thought with our new listeners, I think we may have lost a couple too, but we picked up some listeners over the holidays that I know of. Here's a brief primer on the show and how it goes and what we're doing here. I'm the host. My name is Phil. I'm a foodie. I'm nuts about food. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm crazy about it. I talk about it a lot, and that's why I have the show. I have some really strong opinions about a lot of things, and you may not like all of them, but I don't care, and I'm going to say them. I'm arrogant and noisy and bossy. I am who I am, and I like doing this. Hopefully, you'll like what I have to say and learn from some of the stuff that I'm offering and maybe teach me some new things, because I'm learning a lot too. So if you get a chance to comment on our official blog at zeroface.wordpress.com, that's where everything is. Hopefully, you'll enjoy the show. You can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. There's a link right on our blog in the link section on the right-hand side. It says, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Just click on that. It'll take you right to the subscribe page in iTunes, and you can catch our show. Oh, and I wanted to tell you that we have some exciting news here. We have won our first award. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. No, seriously, that's enough. Thank you. Okay. No, seriously, shut the fuck up. Okay. I have a show to do. Excuse me, people. I'm so proud to announce that as a member of the Beer Safari Podcasting Group, we have been honored with the 2007 Douchebag of the Year Award by the Brewing Network, who gave the award to all other beer-related podcasts. They just kind of lumped us all in together.
Your fourth and final nominee for Douche of the Year is every other beer podcast out there for Douche of the Year. For all of the copying and pretending that that we didn't start this whole thing and make it badass.
That's right.
Every other podcast out there.
Yeah, Biscuit, what do you think of that?
Oh,
very good, Biscuit.
And the winner, and they should wear it proudly as a badge of honor, of the 2007 Brewing Network Awards Douche of the Year, is every other beer-related podcast out there.
Well done, well done.
Thank you. And I'd like to congratulate all of you for being the Douche of the Year. Fantastic.
I know they worked hard at it.
Week after week, or at least once a month, or whatever it is you guys do. You all work hard at being Douches of the Year. And I congratulate you.
You know, we're not really a beer podcast. My Life as a Foodie isn't really a beer podcast. I mean, you know, I talk about beer on the show and related to the Beer Safari. So I guess, you know, guilty by association, or maybe we're just guilty. But we will accept the award. Thank you. And to the Brewing Network, I want to say thank you. I wish I had your common decency to call other people douchebags. Maybe someday I'll be as kind and generous as you. So, the other thing I wanted to kind of hit on here was Zero Face Project. Zero Face Project, which is this podcast, is kind of a part of that. It's starting to take shape now. And I wanted to hit on that briefly, just so you know what's going on and what it is. This podcast may become a monthly thing rather than biweekly as I had intended. I don't know. I may still be able to do it with the frequency. Not that I'm, you know, like really doing it with any kind of frequency, but hopefully more than once a month, but at the very least once a month. The reason for all this is that there's another podcast that I've been involved in for a couple of years, and I'd like to spend more time on that and to bring that back together, as well as some photo essays and video projects that I want to do with the Zero Face Project. So balancing all of those things and working is going to kind of keep me busy. And one thing that might help me do this show more often is not doing the slideshows as often as I do, because those take a lot of time to prepare, and sometimes the release of the show kind of gets hemmed on that. So not doing them as often will help me just concentrate on the show and share recipes, with every show. So there have also been questions about what Zero Face Project is and what it means, so I wanted to kind of share that with you as well. It's a very long, boring story, but I'm going to give you some just a quick synopsis of what it is. I'm a musician, and a few years ago, I wrote a song for a project that I was doing at the time about the facelessness of our society. I called it Zero Face. The internet doesn't really have a face, and a lot of the people you meet on the internet or talk to in message boards or chat rooms are somewhat anonymous. And I think that kind of still applies today, although we're getting better now. We have networking sites like MySpace and Facebook. Anyway, that's where it came from, and the logo for it could have been anything, but I chose the skulls because it kind of fit the theme, and I have an infatuation with Dia de los Muertos, a Mexican holiday that celebrates the dead. Did I say that right? Dia de los Muertos? Muertos? Anyway, that's Zero Face. And Zero Face Project is it's an artist alliance that I founded and produce all of my artistic projects under. I hope to see it grow, you know, in the coming years as I meet more artists, photographers, videographers, writers. I'd like it to be a long-term alliance, and right now it's in its infancy stages, so you're kind of watching its growing pains at the moment. But it is definitely here to stay. It's definitely something I'm going to have my head stuck in for a long time. So getting to the food portion of our show, I'm posting a recipe for potato blinis with creme fraiche and caviar on our website. So you can download that on our website. I'll say it again. Zeroface.wordpress.com. Make those. They're good. These blinis are a great appetizer or hors d'oeuvre for a party or a dinner for a starter. It's very pretty. It's simple. Looks absolutely great on the table. And it just so happens to go well with one of my favorite beers in the entire world, Duvel. Now, I don't know exactly how it's spoken. Duvel. I don't really give a crap. All I know is that I love it for what it is, and I find it to be a beer that I can always, I can open at any time. I can always have a pleasant experience with. I know what it's going to taste like. It's a taste I really like. It's a Belgian strong ale. It's a Belgian strong golden ale, and I'm going to open one right now. It's one of these tall bottles, just like, you know, the Belgians that we like. It's got the little cork in it. I'm going to open it. You know what's coming, right? Just going to poke my eye out. After the year I just had, that is exactly what would happen. I'd poke my eye out with this thing. Listen to this. Oh, yeah. Sexiest beer alive, anyone? Let's pour it. Oh, here's the thing. This beer, you got to pour it really slow. So this might take a while. Time lapse. Let me hit the mic. Yeah, look at that thick head. This is a beautiful beer. You got to pour it really slow because it's got a lot of carbonation. It's bottle conditioned, which means it's got yeast in the bottle that's helping it carbonate. Mmm, nice. You know, to prove what a total beer nerd that I actually am, I'm even drinking this in an official Duvel goblet. It's got the Duvel logo on it. It's really nice. It's got a little dimple in the bottom of the glass, so all the little bubbles come up from the middle. Smells fantastic. Mm. This is sex beer, man. I'm telling you. This is. If beer was sex, this would be it. This happens to be a perfect match for light appetizers like the Bellinis because it drinks a lot like champagne. In fact, they say right on the bottle, take your time when you pour it. It says right here, pour unhurriedly. Pour unhurriedly. We should do everything unhurriedly. That's kind of how we should treat everything. We should treat everything this way. Slow the hell down. Enjoy it. Enjoy these things. Enjoy your food. You enjoy your beer, your wine. Enjoy your life. Because I think we tend to move too hurriedly through things like this. And then we miss the little details that make things like this very special. So this applies to everything. It applies to the beer. It applies to the small bit of caviar that we put on top of the Bellini. Now, Duvel is the same style of beer that another of my favorites is patterned after. You may recall Russian River Brewing's Damnation that I raved about and featured on the show. Well, that's the same style of beer that we have here. In fact, I'm always looking for new batches of Damnation. On the back of each bottle of Damnation, there's a batch number. You can go to RussianRiverBrewing.com, find Damnation on their site, and then look at the batch number. Vinny, the brewer, will always tell you when the batch was brewed and what variations he used this time around, how and when it was bottled, and what kind of yeast he used for fermenting and for bottling. Because, you know, sometimes it changes. So you would kind of have a bottle next to another batch and kind of taste the differences. And they'd be very subtle. So I'll get a new bottle of Damnation every time I bottle get a bottle of Duvel. And then I'll have them side by side. Then I'll pass off from drinking two tall 8% alcohol beers. So I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to drink it, though. Hmm. Oh, it's nice. You know, it's light. One of these beers that doesn't taste like it's 8% alcohol until later. Duvel Brewery was actually an original investor in the Omegang Brewery in Cooperstown. I'm not sure if we featured Omegang on this show yet, but if you know about beer, you should know about Omegang. There in Cooperstown, New York, Duvel actually took over complete control of the brewery and founded a sales organization called Duvel USA, and it handles Omegang and Duvel. And then 2 years ago, they branched out a little bit further and purchased another Belgian, famous Belgian brewery called Brasserie de Achouf, which I probably slaughtered that name too. Anyway, Achouf is fantastic in its own right. In fact, when I homebrew, a few of the yeast strains that I use to make some of my own Belgian styles come from the Achouf brewery. So there's a connection between Clark Head Brewery and Achouf. Although my beers don't taste a percentage point as good as theirs, there's still that connection. And you can kind of taste the similarities there, but they're subtle. Back to the Bellinis. You don't really have to use caviar with these things, but I did because it looks really good. It looks, you know, really presentable with the caviar on top. And don't be worried about the word caviar either. You know, you don't have to break the bank. You can get moderately priced caviar that tastes decent, and you don't have to drop a lot of coin on it. In fact, the caviar that I'm using here is actually lumpfish, and that's not expensive at all. It's not sturgeon roe, which is a lot more expensive, and that's really hard to find too sometimes. But get whatever you can find and whatever you can afford, and when you do get it, eat a lot of it. Caviar is one of those things that we don't get enough of. So when you do eat it, eat as much as you want. Anyway, you don't have to put caviar on these Bellinis if you don't want to. Bellinis are little potato pancakes. They're really light and fluffy, and they're small. They're like the size of a silver dollar. You can use anything to top them. You can use smoked salmon, chopped olives, capers, or nothing. You could just have the Bellini on its own, plain. It's entirely up to you. In fact, I think if you end up, you're going to end up making so many of these things, right? That you'll have so many damn Bellinis. Maybe you want to mix it up. So, you know, do different toppings. It'll look nice on the plate. You go nuts. Anyway, get the recipe off the website. It's courtesy of Sir Thomas Keller at the French Laundry. Yeah, he's not really knighted by the queen or anything. I call him the king. In this house, I give him pretty lofty status because there's a king and the queen of my kitchen. Neither of them live here. Now, hopefully, I can have the queen on the show someday, and you can all meet her and idolize her as much as I do in the kitchen. Beer.
Mm.
You know, I like champagne. I do like champagne a lot. I had it on New Year's. Not enough, obviously. Quit drinking at 9. That's when the accident happened. Yeah, I really like to drink champagne. I wish I could drink it more often. Kind of messes me up, though. Next day, I get a severe freaking headache. And I think that's with anything that you overdo. And it's kind of easy to overdo it with champagne because it drinks like one of these light beers, except it's, you know, 12 to 14% alcohol instead of 8. So you tend to overdo it quite easily. And sometimes it feels like, you know, someone actually bashed you over the head with a champagne bottle. Anyway, Food Network now is showing Cook's Tour again. I guess they're trying to clean up on Bourdain's rising status and popularity because he's everywhere. I mean, my wife said he's on Oprah or he's in Oprah magazine or something. I mean, the guy, he's everywhere. And God bless him. He deserves it. He's a guy whose star needs to shine brightly and quickly because he deserves a lot of recognition, more than he gets, I think. And I can't say I really blame Food Network for showing those shows again, and I'm happy they're on, to be frank with you. Food Network were the first ones to give Bourdain a TV show. And seriously, where would he be if he hadn't gotten that break from Food Network? It's on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. I am recording them all on my TiVo whenever they come on. And when I get enough for 2 hours worth, I'll burn them off to DVD because I collect stuff like that. Anyway, Food Network owns the rights to the show and have never released the series on DVD, which kind of sucks for fans of him and fans of his show. But, you know, they'll produce season after season of shows like, you know, Good Eats and box sets of Rachel Ray's $40 a Day. The thing is, I heard or read that the rights of the show, that Food Network owns the rights, they run out next year. So maybe they're running it one last time before they lose those rights. But it's a great show. Definitely see it. I mean, really, definitely see it. Bourdain wrote on his official blog at Travel Channel that he's a bit miffed at the rerunning the show, but, you know, maybe it'll help raise the interest of his No Reservations show. And he called himself a proverbial turd in the punch bowl. So here's to turds. You may remember a couple episodes ago, we were talking about new American cuisine. I mentioned Ad Hoc, which is Thomas Keller's eatery restaurant. At the time, the waiter who spoke with us about the future of the restaurant mentioned a burger project as an addition to Ad Hoc. He told us that Ad Hoc was kind of, initially it was supposed to be a temporary 6-month placeholder for a bigger burgers and half bottles project that he wanted to do. But the popularity of Ad Hoc has kind of made the restaurant a little bit more permanent. Well, I recently got some information courtesy of the San Francisco Eater. Listen to this. The parking lot at Ad Hoc is a U-shaped, okay? On the left-hand side of the restaurant, there are 4 parking spaces that jut into the building. This is kind of the area between Ad Hoc and Red, and I think Red might be the name of the new place. Anyway, the restaurant will be expanded into these parking spaces, so the 2 restaurants, Ad Hoc and the new one, will kind of occupy the same building. There's going to be outdoor dining and takeaway at the new place, so you can actually get your stuff to go, and then you can sit indoors, too. So they're going to put 19 additional seats to the already 77 seats that are in Ad Hoc and increase the space by about 1,300 square feet. Keller's people already confirmed that burgers and half bottles or whatever it is they're going to call it is back in the works, and summer 2008 is the target opening. So sometime this year, and it would be great if I could go there this fall. It would be nice to see. If you wonder what the significance of burgers and half bottles are, you might recall that near the end of Sideways, remember the movie Sideways? Miles, who is in desperate need of comfort after everything else that happened to him that week, he goes to the wedding of his friend who'd been shitting on him all week. And as he's leaving the church, he runs into his ex-girlfriend, who he really never got over her and he still kind of has a thing for. So he finds out not only is she remarried, but he finds out that she's pregnant. So, I mean, he's just demolished. He skips the reception. He goes right home. He pulls out the best bottle of wine he has in his collection. He drives to a burger joint that he really likes and proceeds to wash down a hamburger with an entire bottle of this aged French Bordeaux or whatever it was that he was drinking. But the look on his face is just complete bliss, and it just sounds like a fantastic way to spend an evening drinking wine and eating hamburgers. But yeah, I'll tell you, when we first watched that movie in the theater, I didn't know what he was shuffling through his closet for. And after everything that had happened to him in the movie, I thought he was getting a gun. He was going to shoot himself, and I thought, how unfair would this be to us, or me, the viewer, You know, after enduring this entire movie, or this guy just getting crapped on the entire time, to end up being so depressed that he shoots himself and dies. Oh, that would have sucked. But I'm glad it ended how it did, because it was a great movie. Now, the other thing I thought was funny is that Disney came out with a new hamburger for kids. It's called the Mickey Burger. They're meat patties, frozen meat patties, shaped like Mickey Mouse's head. I'll put a link on the site. You can check them out. Can you believe that? You know, kids love hamburgers. I don't really think you need to form them in the shape of Mickey Mouse's head. Because, I don't know, that's just kind of weird. I know food needs to be fun for kids and stuff, but it's a hamburger. Kids love hamburgers. It's not like, you know, it's like, oh, I need to dress up the vanilla fudge pudding. No, they're going to eat that, trust me. You know, you could actually serve it in a diaper and they'd eat it. It's something kids like. But, you know, these patties aren't bad enough. And they're frozen patties, you know, the quality of the beef. I'm sure the quality of beef is really high. And parents won't have a problem feeding that to their kids. The irony of the whole thing, I think, would be if it actually had rat or mouse shit in it. Or maybe a mouse or two fell in the vat while they were grinding the patties. Then you really were eating Mickey Mouse. So, here's to Disney. They're great. Oh, I had this article for a while. I read it in the Wall Street Journal a while back. Because I start collecting, the minute I'm done with one of these shows, I just start collecting, you know, stuff to talk about for the next show. And one of the things that I saw was this article, the FDA was on the verge of approving cloned livestock. Well, it just so happens that they just approved it.
FDA is not recommending any additional measures be applied to the food or feed derived from these specified animals, because food derived from these clones is no different from conventionally bred animals. In other words, the risk assessment concludes the meat and milk from cattle, swine, and goat clones are as safe to eat as the food we eat every day.
The FDA says it has insufficient evidence to comment on sheep. Now, overall, the FDA looked at two areas of concerns, animal health and food consumption risks. The group concludes cloning animals is a way to introduce superior genetics to the herd and claims it can produce animals that are healthier. Now, there are many critics of the FDA's plan who are satisfied with their assurances, others who are still concerned about safety, and others who have moral, religious, and ethical concerns. And there's also concern about the potential impact of cloned food on U.S. trade. Some countries outside the U.S. are already worried about genetically manipulated food, and they're already raising some red flags about allowing imports. But some groups are satisfied that the food is safe, including for the Center for Science and Public Interest. We've heard a lot about this group over the year. It's now calling for Congress to hold hearings on implications of animal cloning. We'll see how far that one goes, Kira. Actual cloned animals are really too valuable to be used in food production. They cost up to $20,000 to create in the first place, and they're mostly going to be used for breeding. It's the offspring that we're talking about. They're a different story, and it's important to note that the offspring are not clones in this case. We don't know if there are going to be any labels on this in your supermarket. You show up to buy your meat, you don't necessarily know what you're buying, and the FDA says it won't require labeling. Now, voluntary labeling by food manufacturers may be considered on a case-to-case basis. Now, I thought this was interesting. Cloned foods will not be included in organic food groups, which are labeled. So if you're looking for that type of meat, that'll be easy to understand.
Do you think people will eat the cloned meat, and could this change the way vegetarians think about, you know, eating meat and
this
animals?
This is the big question that everyone's talking about today. Would you eat it? And the FDA wondered the same thing, so they actually held a focus group during its investigative research, and for the most part, people really didn't understand the whole cloning process, and those who were surveyed seemed more concerned about what the animals were being fed during development rather than how they were created. So maybe some education is at hand here. We need to talk more about the cloning process.
All right.
Well, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm thinking it's a bad thing. But it kind of reminds me of something I saw at the deli last week. I was buying some sliced roast beef for sandwiches. And they had American-style Kobe beef. I'd never heard of that before. It was fairly inexpensive, too. Which, you know, for anything that has the name Kobe next to it, it was inexpensive. Anyway, my wife wondered what the difference between Japanese Kobe and American-style Kobe beef was. And I joked, and I said that Japanese Kobe beef, Japanese Kobe, is fed organic grains, beer, and sake, and that American-style Kobe just drank Budweiser. Then I actually read about it, and I found that in America, Japanese Wagyu cattle were bred with Angus cattle to create a crossbred animal that would be stronger and more able to survive the U.S. climate and the ranching methods that we have here. So the Japanese full-blood Wagyu are typically raised confined in indoor barns like veal to prevent their movement, and then it increases the marbling, while the Wagyu animals in the U.S. are raised in pastures and finished in a feed yard. So this crossbreed is kind of a mix between the two. It's been named American-style Kobe beef and then was originally produced just for export to Japan, but now it's available everywhere. It's pretty much designed to mimic the diet that Japanese cattle have been receiving all this time for Kobe beef. Wagyu cattle in the United States, they feed them a mixture of corn, alfalfa, barley, and wheat. So no sake, but no Budweiser either, which is good. I've been reading this book by Barbara Kingsolver. Did I pronounce your last name? Animal Vegetable Miracle, it's called. Great book, a real eye-opener. A good book for any foodie to read. But my wife and I are really hooked on buying as much of what we eat at the farmers markets as we can. So we notice a lot of things when we enter the grocery store. And some of the things that Barbara touched on in her book kind of helped me open my eyes a little bit. One of the first things that I know that I've hit on before is organic produce. They really crank up the prices in the grocery stores for this stuff. And I think it's because they know that people will pay for it. It's like that old adage, you know, you get what you pay for. But in this case, I think you're paying more for what you're getting. But, you know, that's how I see it anyway. That might not be true, but that's how I see it. So there's this local farm here in Cyprus. They started selling at the farmer's market that we go to. And he had all sorts of information about the soil that he grows his stuff in and how they don't have to spray their crops because the soil is actually treated with an organic substance that keeps the predators down. Not away, just down. And that's important to note because he said no farm will ever really be able to keep bugs off their stuff. Bugs are just going to adapt. You pour chemicals on your vegetable plants, the bugs are going to come back and have a bigger tolerance for it. So you're going to have to pour more on, and then their tolerance grows even larger. So before you know it, and this is a fact, we've tripled the amount of chemicals that we're treating our food with, and we still have bugs. In fact, they've declined the amount of bugs that are eating their stuff, but we still have them. We're not really going to win that war, ever. Just get used to it. Bugs are going to be here. You drop an atomic bomb and the cockroaches are going to still be walking around. So what does that tell you? These organic farmers are treating their soil now with special chemistry that's not harmful to humans. It simply reduces the amount of bugs that can eat their crops. It's certified and it definitely qualifies as organic. And his stuff's about 40% cheaper at the farmer's market than the same stuff that I see in the store. And the other thing about the grocery store that sucks is that, you know, you end up wasting a lot of what the farmers are producing because, as it turns out, they have really strict guidelines as to what they'll buy. So the eggplant that they have, for instance, right, has a crooked neck? No, we'll pass. Like, if you ever grow eggplant or grow something in your garden, it looks kind of funky and ugly. You'd be lucky to get a straight one. Those are the ones they want. You can keep the other ones. If it looks ugly, they don't want it. Only the good stuff. Bell pepper looks like a cabbage patch kid. We'll pass. Only strong, perfectly shaped items will make it in the grocery store because that's what people want to buy. They want it to look nice. So what happens? All the ugly vegetables and the ugly fruit, it either gets tossed or it's sold at the farmer's market or roadside stands. And I'll tell you, at a 40% savings, I'll take all the ugly shit you want to throw at me. Take it. I'll take it. Because it tastes great. Doesn't have to look good on the plate. Well, it does look good on the plate. I'm looking at the stuff in the grocery store selling now. It really doesn't look that fresh compared to what I'm seeing at the market, you know, at the farmer's market. It's limp and lifeless. Compared to the stuff we're buying on Saturday morning that was just picked the night before or the day before, you know, it looks limp and lifeless. So not only are you going to charge me more for the beautiful stuff that you're buying, but it's laying around for a few extra days, and then the life's being sucked out of it. So what was beautiful and vibrant when you bought it is now dying and rotting right in front of me. It's begging to die. And I have great disdain for grocery stores here in Southern California to begin with. It's the only time that I ever go into these places is when I really have to or if it's completely convenient for me because they had a really huge labor dispute a few years ago. I'm not sure if you know about this. They went on strike, and they were on strike for a while, over the holidays no less. Like, could you pick a better time to go on strike? They were really cruel to everybody who entered the store. I mean, there were some stories of elderly people who'd been shopping at these stores for years. Elderly people, okay? Like, some of these people, they don't have a lot of money. And some of these people can't even drive because, you know, they don't have cars or maybe they lost their license because they drove their car into a DMV or, you know, they went through a farmer's market and killed a bunch of people. Anyway, they can't drive. So they're walking to these stores. It's close. They need a few things, you know. They need a quart of milk or some bread. These same checkers who saw them every week or every day were picketing and screaming in their face to stay away. They didn't care. Assaulting them, verbally assaulting them. And these people were frightened. They physically thought they were going to get hurt. And for some reason, this strike swallowed their humanity, if they ever had any. But some of these knuckleheads got into physical altercations with people that crossed the picket lines. They actually got in fights and were throwing things. It got bad. Police had to come. Their own customers, the people who patronized the place and helped put food on their tables by shopping there, they were treating them like this. They simply don't give a shit. And what were they fighting over? They were fighting over health benefits for part-time employees. They wanted 100% coverage to part-timers who had multiple children, things like that. That's a shock, right? Multiple kids working at a part-time at a grocery store. I mean, it fits the bill for me. And listen, everyone has a right to health care. I just don't know a lot of places that give you 100% coverage. 100%. That means no out-of-pocket. That means they're going to pick up for everything. And you're part-time? I mean, usually, in most cases, part-timers don't even qualify for those kinds of benefits. Anyway, that's more than I wanted to say, but I was happy when the strike was over. And then a lot of these stores actually closed down and the clerks lost their jobs, so I felt like there was a bit of retribution there. One other thing I want to hit on was this Cheesecake Factory. We don't normally go to places like the Cheesecake Factory. It was a teenager's birthday recently, and we were invited to go, and we went, and there was dinner. They chose this place. It was a nice-looking place, pleasant staff, really good service. But the menu was humongous. I mean, this menu went on for days, to the point where it took me 25 minutes to figure out what I wanted to eat. There were so many different things, so many different items to choose from. But the worst part was that the food portions, when the food finally came, the food portions were absolutely brutal. I'll give you an example. My wife, when we go to places like this, she usually tries to eat pretty healthy. So in some cases, she'll just order a salad. Now, you can order salad at a place like this, and, you know, usually it'll come and it'll be nice and fairly healthy for you if they don't, you know, overdo it with sauces and stuff like that. This thing shows up. These aren't plates that they served this on. This thing was a platter. It was a giant platter with about a head and a half of lettuce in it. And I'm not joking. This thing was huge. It was a salad for two. And the funny thing was, it was listed under a dietary menu or something. It was just ironic that they would have a, you know, a weight conscious menu and then serve you this giant, you know, thing. And everything was huge. I ordered, you know, unlike my wife, I don't care about my health when I'm out with places like this. I'm just going to eat. So I ordered like a pulled pork sandwich with fries. And they showed up with this plate was giant. I ate maybe half the sandwich, half the fries. I ate the coleslaw. And I was stuffed. And I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. Everything they serve has a portion for two. Who can eat like this? Are we not fat enough in this country? We're eating those big portions. And then you're going to have room for cheesecake? I'm not a restaurateur. I don't want to give them advice. But I would reduce the number of selections on your menu. Serve about 40 or 30% less than you're serving. And you can reduce the prices while you're at it, right? Because it won't cost you as much. You'll waste less food. You'll turn tables over quicker because people will be finished. And then you'll sell more of that cheesecake that you're famous for. But I'm not a restaurateur, so I won't give that advice. I have a whole rant about buffets, but I'm going to save that one because it's a long, long, drawn-out thing. I could do a whole show on that. Good beer, folks. I love Belgian golden ale, especially this one. Hey, listen, when you're making these blinis, before I go, when you're making these blinis, I use Yukon Gold potatoes. That's really important. Keller says that they absorb more cream than other potatoes. And there really is a difference. You know, you can't just use any potatoes. Every potato has a different place in your repertoire of food. He says they absorb more cream and they have a better texture. And texture is very important. So, you know, if you end up using russet potatoes, you're not going to get the same result. This recipe makes a lot more batter than you're probably going to use too. So you're going to want to make the whole thing. There might be a little waste, but oh well. You can't really reduce this menu. It's not like, you know, serves 20, so I'll cut it in half or I'll cut it in quarters. You can't do that with this because it's too tough. So make the whole thing, okay? If you got leftovers, make as many as you want. Make the blinis as quickly after making the batter as you can. Consider them for a couple hours. Just don't let it get cold. Keep it in a warm place because it's got that cream in it. And if the cream gets cold, it's going to clot. And if it clots, then you're screwed. It's like having lumps in your pancake batter. I'm going to spare you the play-by-play details on how to make these things. Just read the recipe, then get to work. You're going to love these. Your guests are going to love these. And match them with a nice golden bubbly beer like Duvel, Damnation, or maybe a tall glass of champagne. Oh, and the other thing I do is I take a little piece of chive, and then I place it across the top. Looks really nice. It's got a nice little touch to it. You look at the picture on the website. It'll kind of show you how I did mine. And that was a big hit. Okay. Okay, well, I'm done here. I am done talking. That's it from My Life as a Foodie. Thank you for checking in and for spending another 30 minutes with me. Stay well. We'll see you guys next time on My Life as a Foodie. Arrivederci.
Four and five, M4 6.